Just a quick note before we get started. Halfway through this recording, the audio for one of our guests got very corrupted, weren't able to salvage it. So for Benny's Grand Clash experience, his game recap, we're going to release that as a special bonus episode. And you can expect to see that within the next week. And other than that, please enjoy the episode. Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 glory scored with a single objective card. My name is Davey. I'm your co-host. With me, as always, I've got Phil. How are you doing, Phil?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
And we've got actually two guests with us today. We've got Benny. How are you, Benny?
How's it going?
We got Adam. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. Not bad at all.
Yeah, so we've got both these guys on because they went to the Warhammer World Grand Clash, and they both bought tomes, and we thought it would be a good time to talk about that. So we'll talk about how they did their the different approaches they took and what they took away, and I think it's got some relevance to the game as a bigger picture. For context, we are looking at still waiting on the release of Rippa's Snarlfangs. It's kind of the next big thing that we should see coming down the line. And no FAQ yet about the from Grimwatch onwards. So if you're listening and wondering why we're so out of line with all this great info that just dropped, well, maybe it's because we record a little bit ahead. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at WTHcast, and we'll talk some of the other contact information towards the end. Before we get into the meat of it, we want to talk community shout outs. For me and the two of you, and Benny and Adam, you I don't know if you've gone back and watched after the fact, but for those of us that had to watch jealously from afar, Warhammer TV did a stream where Nick Baton and John Wynn Reese were commentating, and I didn't get to watch the whole thing, but I did get to watch actually a little bit of one of your games, Adam.
Against Jay Clare, I think that was.
Yeah, they were top notch. The commentating, I was very impressed. I enjoyed what that team did. So just wanted to give a thanks and a shout out to those guys. Anybody else got anything they want to give a shout out to the community out there?
Well, I think just generally and the Grand Clash, you know, everyone there, it's just a great time. Just get shout out, everyone.
Sure, excellent. Well, we're gonna go on to the next piece. It's what the heck is going on with you. This is where we talk about what we're doing in the hobby lately, and specifically for you guys, if you actually give us a couple, tell us when it comes to you, how you got into Underworlds, maybe how long you've been playing, and then what you've been doing lately. So let's start off with the guests. Adam, you want to kick it off here?
Certainly, yeah. So right, background. I started Underworlds in June this year as a kind of back into the hobby after a pretty long absence of about 5 years or so. I've only played Eyes of the Nine, and I'm sure we'll come on to that in due course. But racked up a few games with those guys, took them to the Grand Clash. Took them to the Grand Clash in Dallas, actually, before then, back in August. Or was it September? I'm not sure. But either way, Grand Clash over, starting to expand my portfolio of played warbands. I'm dabbling with Magors, actually, which is a bit of a change of pace.
Yeah,
but I'm taking a bit of a strange route with them. I won't give too much away in case you see them in the local tournament. Listeners, good listeners out there. But, unorthodox, should we say. Unorthodox.
Okay. All right. And I don't know what you're running. I have done a little playing with Magors. I think the last time I played against Magors, I was taking Reavers, and I was like, oh, this is Magors. I'm going to offset it diagonally and take advantage of my speed and just kind of pounce on whoever comes forward. And then he happily placed three objectives on his back edge and walked backwards to score supremacy. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, boy.
What's happening? So that was particularly shocking. So I don't know if that's the route you're going, but there's some interesting play out there for that.
Yes, for sure.
Hey,
sure.
Benny, give us a little bit of your hobby background, what you've been up to lately.
Oh yeah, I actually started as well, similarly to Adam. I started in like June, July. So I've been playing a lot of Curse Breakers going up to the Grand Clash. So for now, I've just been kind of messing around with some new decks, a bit of Despoilers and Gates. Going back to my old favorite, the Reavers as well. I used to play a lot of them before the cutoff of the cards. Kind of fell back in Curse Breakers because I learned the game with them, brought them to the Grand Clash. So it's kind of how it went.
All right. So there's a little nostalgia for you going back to the Curse Breakers, huh?
I fell back.
Yeah. All right. Phil, how about you? What's your latest?
Just more experimenting with the Wild Hunt. It's been very up and down though. So results still to be determined as to if they're working or not. Some games it's like win huge and then other games get stomped. So not quite sure there, but otherwise still running our local league. We're about halfway done with our third season there. And it's been great. We keep getting new people. People are really happy with the changes in Beastgrave, mm-hmm. seem to be enjoying the rotation. So it seems like a good positive state for the game to be in.
Yeah, it's continued to be fun to see the new warbands or new takes on old warbands with as the cards rotate in and people getting excited and going through that sort of discovery phase of the new cards. For me, I think the last time we were on, I was talking about rushing through all kinds of different or trying out different season one warbands. I've sort of settled in on Reavers for a while. I've been playing a whole bunch of them, and that's been pretty fun. As everybody sort of tilts a little bit towards a hybrid or objective play to just continue in the full, absolutely savage, all out aggro, flying around. It's been cool. It's been fun. I've got some high risk objectives in there, like Let the Blood Flow, which, you know, when it goes off, you feel like the champion of all things, but it's not often that it does. So.
Well, that's a tough one.
But you don't have Khorne's Chosen in there.
No, although I think maybe the last two games I played, I could have scored it. And the second to last one, I would have scored it with Targor, who is the only fighter left on the board and appropriately is the one pictured on that art.
Perfect. So
I think we figured out, including upgrades that dropped, out of the 32 health that had been on the board, 31 damage had been done to it. There was one guy with one health left on the board. Yeah. It was a very, very Reavers game. So.
Yeah, that's the way of the Reavers.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to be talking Tomes and then Tomes at the Warhammer World Grand Clash specifically, but we'll expand that out to talk about it sort of in the context of the bigger game. So I'm going to come at you guys. You guys will be carrying this episode for us, basically.
That's fine.
We'll be asking
no pressure.
Okay, good. So we're going to be asking why Tomes, why the decks in particular that you built. We'll talk some about the process of building your decks. We'll go through some of the performance at Warhammer World and then some of the lessons learned, and we'll take the tangents as they come from there. So that's kind of the roadmap of what we're looking for. But let's start off with why Tomes. And we're going to throw it back to Benny here. So you said you were going back to Curse Breakers because they were the warband that you learned the game with. But you didn't learn it with Tomes, I would imagine. So what made you think Tomes?
I actually had a very different build that I'd been working on. And it was like a very aggressive Curse Breakers build. I would like to give a shout out to Tommy Conboy. Yeah. Basically gave me a couple of lessons when I was playing that way, and then helped me to change my deck and show me that Acolyte could really work. I think with the old cards going away and Hidden Paths, Spectral Wings, these sort of things, I think it's really played into helping a defensive kind of build as well. And with the Curse Breakers in particular, with a lot of the Tomes, they work very well just generally. They're not really a waste of an upgrade. You've got Incantations, Vitality, ones like that. So it worked very well for me.
It feels like they're one of the ones that can, I can't remember if you included it. And I should say this, you've both been kind enough to provide your deck lists, and for somebody who wants to listen along, those will be in the show notes so you can bring them up. But that's also a warband that can leverage a Tome of Offerings pretty well if you get it on Stormsire and have him start blasting people at range. Okay, so had you played Tomes in Season 2 as well, or was this just kind of the shift that you'd done here since Season 3?
It was actually This is my first to go at it. As you know, I was a big Reavers player, so it was quite the opposite, that whole pure Carnage kind of deck. So it was complete opposite, really. So this is a, it took me a while to get away from my aggro tendencies, not wanting to go in and get kills and trying to think, right, what's the best tactical play here? Things like that. But once I got into it, I actually started really enjoying it and enjoying that type of play.
Excellent. So, Adam, why did you go with Tomes? And you took Eyes. So tell me why Tomes, and then tell me why Eyes in particular. Or maybe it was the other way around. I don't know. So
yeah, indeed. So, I mean, Tomes, why Tomes? I've played Eyes all the way through, well, since June, but through season two, at the tail end of that. I played them competitively. They focus very heavily on the passive side of things. So hiding is a key thing for them. I don't want to engage. I want to stay back and try and protect my guys at all costs. So quite the opposite of your Reavers by the sounds of things, Davey.
yeah.
And season two, the objectives are really well set up for that. So with things like escalation, with things like superior tactician, they really fed into that. They really helped. With those gone, it's kind of finding a replacement for that. And Tomes is the best way at the moment in the meta. We'll see what happens in the future if they get some good kind of universal season, sorry, end of phase three cards. That could really change things. But for the time being, Tomes are really the only alternative, because it's a trade-off, right? Because you've got a lot of upgrades that are spent in getting these Tomes in your deck. Some of them are very useful, so Tome of Vitality, great card. It's great, basically great fortitude, but you can get some free glory from it. Tome of Glories, get a lot of mileage out of that. That's a brilliant card. Easily get a couple of glory just through the game by playing, by using the action on the card. Incantations, I get no mileage out of, because I minimize risk wherever possible. Casting spells seems an inherently dangerous thing to do, so I tend not to do that so much. Vortimus is he's not what he's cracked up to be, at least in my experience. So really, it's just those two, glory and vitality, that really get any use for me. I don't take offerings because it's another restricted slot, and there's a lot of competition for those, particularly with the change from 5 restricted to 3. So I actually ran 5 Tomes as opposed to 6 or 7 that you might see in other decks. And really, that's just finding the balance between having that ability to score big in the end phase of the third, but having the tools that you need to be able to deal with other things, which I think is quite key for Eyes of the Nine. It's well, for most warbands, but Eyes of the Nine have to remain relatively flexible to be able to respond to threats as and when they occur.
Sure.
So run down your 5 Tomes for me real quick. You said it was Glories, Vitality. What else was in yours?
Yeah, so the other 3, Healing, Insight, and Diseases. But really, Warfare is just as good as those 3. I think I've used each of those 3 once. I think I've actually used the effect once in about 40, 50 games. So they don't see a lot of playtime. A part of that is because of keeping guessing, which is a bit of a staple of the deck. And obviously, you can't get that fourth action from an upgrade card. You have to be using your own integral actions. And that's a factor. But I mean, situationally, yeah, they could be good. Obviously, a benefit of Tome of Diseases is it's a bypass for the Crown of Avarice. So you can use that to knock the final wind off. And as it's an upgrade and not a gambit, you don't get the negative, and you still get the glory from it. So situationally, sure, but yeah, normally you don't want your Tome carrier up in the action anyway. So
I think a story I've probably told before is I had this clever plan. There was a Storm Sire on 1 health left, but he had Crown of Avarice on him. I was getting all excited to use a commanding stride to get Molag next to him, and then I'd Tome of Diseases him to get around that. I was very proud of myself. And then
very
my
nice.
opponent promptly double critted Sphere of Gur on Cursebreaker and killed him for me. So,
so this is magic. That. It's not good for you. It's dangerous. Yeah. Stay dangerous. Away.
Benny, how many Tomes did you take, and which ones did you take?
So mine's a bit different. I run 6, and I did a lot of magic, so incantations was a big card for me, really. Incantations, offerings, vitality, healing, glories, and diseases. I actually got some good Tome of Diseases kills off with offerings. Nice. It was actually the Friday skirmish before the Grand Clash. I got 2 off with both with offerings on the gits. But apart from that, diseases doesn't get used too much, along with healing, but the other 4 I use quite a lot. The incantations helps a lot with getting the spells off.
Certainly.
Which I need to, for my deck to work.
I can see that. And that's one where it can drop on anybody. So you've used Tome of Insight once, it sounds like, Adam. Mm-hmm. What was it? How did you feel? Because I know when that card dropped, people were looking at it like, oh, that seems real powerful. But the reality is it's most useful early on. But that's also the most valuable activation to burn. So have you had any
takes? So I wouldn't be inclined to use it early on, I don't think, because it's always a tosser between one of those actions and drawing a power card if you've got nothing else to do. And invariably, certainly early on in the game, you want to start moving through that power deck. I run 22 cards in my power deck too, so it's always a toss-up. And you think, okay, I could use that, but I could also potentially draw another tome. That could be another glory at the end of the game or something else that's quite useful to kind of squirrel away for the next turn, even if it's not useful then. So I think that's the competition that the cards often have in terms of those extra kind of nice-to-haves like the insights. I've used it once when I'd kind of squirreled away my tome keeper at the back, just out of range of charge from the remaining players on the opposition's team. But just used it to make sure in my own peace of mind, I didn't have any sneaky push cards or anything that could thwart me. So using the Tome of Insight there to make sure actually, yeah, they are safe is when I've used it. That was once, as I say. I think ordinarily there's just too much competition for other actions out there.
Sure, definitely agree.
I know with Molog, I had some occasions because I would include the card that had him, you know, get a glory for activating the same fighter four times. So I could sometimes get some, because I wasn't working for Keep Them Guessing. I was just working for poor activation. So I'd occasionally say, I am going to take one swing. So I'll just Tome of Warfare's up a little bit, or just need a little extra insurance. And so healed him a little bit. But yeah, I agree. Most of them end up being pretty corner case.
So. That's quite interesting, actually, with a few of the cards one of the cards that I can think of that's been released recently. So Soothing Companion could be quite a nice synergy with that, I guess. I've not used it myself. But if it counts as activating the player, you heal a weed, which is pretty good.
And Tome of Healings alongside Soothing
Companion. Yeah, so it's a 2-for-1.
Tome of Healing can be very useful. Get that extra wound, so just you make sure you don't die at the end. It's worked for me a few times.
Yeah. Since we're on the subject of upgrades and your tomes, what you said you have 22 power cards. Let's stay in the upgrades section. You specifically only took Adam. You only took 5 tomes, which left you room for 6 other upgrades. And what else did you fill that space up with?
Yeah. So. There's the essentials, right? There's the stuff that I have to have to survive. So that's Fameway Crystal. It's still invaluable. Great card. You can use it to teleport away to the backfield where there's no one there because they've been trying to rush you down. That's often very useful. It's a great Fortitude, similar kind of thing. Staying alive is the main priority for me, primarily. So that just helps that. I would take Sudden Growth, and it was in the deck, but the change from 5 to 3 restricted meant I had to drop it, unfortunately. Survival Instincts, at the moment, such a good card because there's very few downsides of being a quarry. And on Vortimus, it's brilliant, who tends to be my tome carrier. Any card that's on 2 dodge, suddenly having 2 shields as well, because they're on guard and they can't be pushed back as well. It's such a good card. I'm sure we'll see more things that have negatives of being a quarry as it's more warbands released. But for the time being, gleaming card.
Sure.
Larval Lance is in there because, again, just really strong counter-offensive play that it provides. I find it so extremely satisfying. Teleporting an erstwhile Na'vi or Tur'ash into the back line and save the steeple step with Larval Lance, killing a big guy. That really gets me going.
You were actually telling me that story at the Grand Clash, weren't you?
I think I did, yeah.
I remember.
That's how much I enjoy it, yeah. Crown of Avarice, really, really useful card for this warband. I think it's useful in most warbands, to be fair. It's got very few downsides. I was really amazed that it wasn't restricted, actually, in the most recent list, because it's everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or even, an FAQ where it's not the glory from the kill, but another one. I think that would make it more balanced. But hey, for the time being, I'm loving it. Crown of Avarice, great card. And finally for me, Silver Tether, which is a Eyes of the Nine specific card. it's basically performance key. So if the bearer is on an objective at the end of the third phase, it's one glory. So that usually goes on the tone bearer, but it just gives me a bit more flexibility if I have to spread the risk a bit. I find that helps.
Sure, makes sense. So what I'm hearing is that even though you're down to five tomes, mm-hmm. you still have at least two of those other upgrades specifically are providing extra glory in some way, be it Crown of Avarice or the Silver Tether.
Yes, and with the Tome of Glories, you know, you can pick up another couple from that as well. So
sure,
it's exactly. all that lovely passive glory.
You have a lot of glory squirreled away in the upgrades, which is kind of a sneaky place to keep it. And we think about Acolyte of the Cataphranes, it basically turns every single tome into a destiny to meet slumbering key.
Slumbering key.
Every one of those becomes that with some side effect with the requirement that you do draw that objective at the end. Benny, what else did you use your space? Were you at 20 power cards?
Yeah, I had 20, so I only had four. For survivability, then I had Great Fortitude and Eldritch Ward, which is probably my most important card. If I can get Eldritch Ward on early for the Tome Bearer, it's great. I also, then my other two, I have the Storm. If I can get one of them on one of the other Amasur Rastus, they can just get my spells off very easily. And then Glory Seeker, which was very, very important. That was actually a late emission, put that in late. And it's killed Crackmarrow, putting Amos up to three hammers for damage twice, and also killed Scritch. Wow. I was so glad I put it in. So that Glory Seeker can also get Storm Sire up to three damage. You can get Amos to four, or you can get Rastus to three with Cleave, which often helps.
Especially with the lethals around to maybe give it that one extra little blip.
It's an important card.
So we've talked upgrades. This is almost the backwards way of how people usually build their decks, but let's keep in the power cards here. What was your overall plan? We'll go back to Adam here. Give me the blitz rundown of what your gambits were, and then kind of give me your overall thought process in selecting those.
Yeah, sure. So, as I've kind of explained already, it's dancing around, it's staying out of the way, it's not getting hit, and it's just general sneaky maneuvers. What I've not mentioned is also the importance of denying glory too. That's kind of part and parcel with staying back. You know, I longboards whenever I can, pretty much. But denying, starving the opponent of glory is just as important as scoring it yourself. So a lot of the gambits reflect that. I've also got a shortcut, which is a fantastic objective. So there's the obligatory cards that you have to take to score it. But I'll probably take them all anyway, actually. But if there's ever a grey area, if it's on the edge between one or the other and one scores it, shortcut, and one doesn't, then the scoring card will go in. So in terms of jumpy roundy, mixing up-y, running away-y, Bound by Fate, very good card. It's got a lot of synergies with running someone forwards and then teleporting them backwards and giving them somebody else, like the Blue Horror, instead.
This is like a range 3 confusion for your friendlies. This is that. Is that Bound by Fate?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, Eyes of the Nine specific. Deceitful Step, which is probably the best card in the deck. In fact, it is the best card on the deck, Deceitful Step. Again, Eyes of the Nine specific. You roll a magic dice on lightning. You get to any unheld starting hex on a swirly or a crit. You get to any unheld objective. And that's anywhere on the board, and there's no movement token you add to them. It's just the free teleport. Fantastic card. The only rub is you can't use it if you're adjacent to an enemy fighter. So it's just something worth bearing in mind. But yeah, that saved my bacon more than a few times. I think every game I use it and it's decisive. Just a brilliant card. On the same kind of note, Confusion, which is the nice synergy of being able to block an objective, or I should say switch onto an objective. The same being true for Deceitful Step if you need to deny the enemy objectives. What else? Center of Attention. Same kind of thing, but really helps to score Scrum. A new fantastic surge card that we get a lot of use out of. But also pulling people off objectives. So someone at the Blue Horror, someone in the backfield, two away from a held objective, center of attention on him, and they're suddenly pulled off. And if you get two for one, it feels even better. Mirror Movers in there too. Really good cards. There, so many uses. You can use it to push an opponent into a lethal. You can use it to push them onto the sidelines or onto an objective. So then use Encroaching Shadow or Lethal Ward, which I've also got in there. It can be used to block Pit Trap as well, which is very good because it's the same reaction window after the attack. Mm-hmm. So that's very useful and worth knowing. It doesn't block Snare though, because Snare happens during the attack. So again, worth knowing. Yeah, get a lot of damage with that, or just moving backwards, running away, whatever it is. It's basically a sidestep, but better because you can use it on somebody else. So there's that. There is Encroaching Shadow and Lethal Ward that I've already mentioned. That's really just to give this warband a bit of bite. And we're hanging back. We're not going to have too many kinetic effects up front. So having those options to cause some damage early on, or knock that final wound off after a charge, that's really, really useful. It just gives us more options, more flexibility. We've got Frenzied Search, which is there. I wouldn't have it if it wasn't a 22-card deck, but I just wanted the extra upgrade. And actually, it can be quite useful to try and search for that card that scores shortcut or to get something else that's quite useful. So that's a really good card. Restless Prize is in there. I think, again, it's one of those that's in pretty much every deck that I've seen, certainly at the Grand Clash. It's just such a good card. With objective play really coming into the game a lot more, it can be used to deny an objective. It can be used to kind of trigger all sorts of things, really. Silver Tether. I've seen it with Shifting Reflection used very well. So putting an objective under an enemy that you quite like to smash, Shifting Reflection, bring them back into your half and hit them with something hard and heavy. Such a good card, really versatile. Yeah, it's get a lot of mileage out of that one. Transfixing Stare, again, pretty ubiquitous. I'm amazed this wasn't restricted either because it's just so powerful. And Eyes of the Nine get really good use out of it because you summon the horror up next to something big and scary, Transfixing Stare, and they're immobilized for the rest of the turn.
Yeah.
And then they hit the blue horror, he flips to the Brimstone, and next move you run away. So it's ideal. And lastly, last but certainly not least, is Flexible Strategy. This card is really, really quite important for this deck because, as we'll see when we get to the objectives, there's a lot of glory. What's the word? Not modifiers, but great gains, solid gains, opening gambit, all those kind of things. And if you've got three of those in your hand, one of them might be Acolyte of the Cataphrones, for example, in your opening hand, the last thing you want to do is throw all those away because it's a big chunk of glory that you're saying goodbye to. Flexible Strategy, I think, came really into its own once every other game. And any card that does that, that doesn't brick your hand, which is a key risk of this warband, is, yeah, it was an auto-include for me. A really, really useful card. And that's it for my gambits.
Very nice. Yeah, that's the things I wanted to cycle back to, especially the chip damage. That seemed especially handy in your deck because it's likely they're only getting one or two threats all the way down those long boards if it's that set up. Mm-hmm. So if you can pour the damage onto whoever the one or two threats that are getting to you are, then you're really making their life even more difficult.
Yes. And same with them. So Faneway as well as a counter to that. You know, a lot of heavy hitters have four wounds. They Faneway in, Kachara gets an attack off, there's three wounds, and then Lethal Ward to chip off the fourth. Or if it's one in your backfield on the edge, then same thing for Encroaching Shadow. It's really, as I say, just having that toolbox of things and that flexibility of play that you can use to get yourself out of sticky situations.
And then the other thing before we hop over to Benny, tell me more about, you mentioned going longboards and what I have not seen as much longboards as I've seen people throwing the boards diagonal. Was there a reason you chose long versus diagonal? What was the thought process there?
I think so. There is a little bit of difference in terms of distance. If you fully offset the diagonals, then it is a bit further for them to go. I think an element, if I'm being quite honest, is psychological. You put long boards down and it looks longer. It looks like a longer distance. And that can be quite intimidating, actually. It sounds silly, but I genuinely think that is a factor. There's not that much in it, and it also channels people into coming forward. And what I find is fewer people want to leave someone back in their backfield, which leaves it open for me to teleport normally my Tome Carrier with Deceitful Step or with Faneway into the backfield. So I think it's probably more psychological than anything else. As woolly as that answer sounds, that's why
Fair.
I prefer it.
All right,
sure.
Benny, talk to us about your gambits. Now I know spellcasting is kind of a centerpiece of yours, and I think we'll see some more of that when we take a look at your objectives. So I'm expecting a number of gambit spells here. likely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was very different. The Adam mine was very spell heavy. I had 8 spells, and the only ones that weren't are Shadowed Step, Discourse Shortcut, and Frenzied Search in order to get more spells or more tomes, whatever whatever I need the most of. Yeah. So I've got Abyssos Unmaking, which is huge, I think, at the minute. If I could get that off on someone who's trying to play objective heavy, it really ruins their game plan. It's happened a few times. And then I've got my, get my ping damage from things like Withering, Cry of Thunder. It's like an anti-scrum card at the minute. It's pretty good. And I've got Sacred Salvo, which also helps with objective play. Unfocused Blast, more ping damage there. And Sorcerer's Riposte, which is a nasty card. If you can get to my plantations on with that, it's pretty much shield.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say a number of these are spells that require double channel, like the double lightning, but like you said, once Tome of Incantations is on there, those become not quite trivial but pretty easy to trigger.
Or you can get the Storm on one of the other mages. Sure. You only need to roll for one in as well.
Yeah.
So I've also got for Arcane Transposition, which scores Shortcut very easily, but it's also very useful for just basically a confusion, but you have to cast a spell. It's also a very useful card. So all mine is about just trying to get the spells out, hopefully for when I get my Magical Storm and get enough damage out as well. So
sure, let's hop straight onto that. Is that tell me what your objective looks like. That'll kind of
for objectives
make a lot of this more clear. Yeah.
So from objectives, the only one where I actually have to kill someone is Strange Demise. So the rest, I've got my Acolyte, I'm a Cut at Risk. Got Combination Strike, Fired Up, Focal Formation, which caused me a bit of bother, but I'll talk about that later. Harness of Storm is probably the easiest card in the game, maybe. Overpower, I'm casting a lot of spells, although sometimes it's harder than it seems. Yeah, and then Solid Gains is just another toying with having great gains in there, but Solid Gains is just a lot more reliable.
Yeah, I know you can always tell when the Cursebreaker player is struggling to get that Harness to Storm off, because they're standing there and attempting to empower, and you just see the frustration building.
Yeah. Oh god.
You chuckle.
I have a horror story about that, but we'll keep it for later when we're talking about the matchups.
All right, sounds good.
Horror story.
So Adam, we know one of your objectives. Acolyte, and I guess we know Shortcut's in there. Tell us what else you've got in there.
Yeah, sure. So Six Surge, obviously. So starting with those, Scrum, really easy to score cards. We're normally hiding at the back on long boards, so super easy. And with Center Retention 2, worth knowing as well, because I've met a few people that didn't know this, but it triggers even if it's your opponents as well. So if they score it and you've got it in hand, you score it too, which is just worth knowing.
Yep.
Warning Shot, which is fine. It's all right. It's a restricted. It's particularly good with the Brimstone Horror. The Brimstone Horror gets a reaction the first attack per phase, and it's hitting on 2 swords, so he normally misses. You can generally tell when I'm trying to score Warning Shot, because I'll target someone normally who's got an assist and has got like 2 shields or something with a 2 sword blue horror, Brimstone Horror. But yeah, that's useful. Shortcut, that I've already mentioned. I've got 3 cards that can score Shortcut. I'm dabbling with the idea of putting in Shifting Reflection, actually, to make that 4. But it's pretty reliable as it is. I think I worked out the percentage of having a Shortcut scoring hard card in my opening hand to be something like 50%. So it's not bad. And with Frenzied Search in there as well, actually, right. It's pretty reliable. Martyred is in there. I don't like Martyred, but it's the best of the bad situation at the moment with the available options. It's one of those that sometimes I can't help but think it's so obvious I'm trying to score it. know, poor noble Tirosh is out there just waiting for an act with head on. I suppose on the flip side of that, though, it's similarly obvious when someone else is trying to get to score Martyred themselves. And that fact's in quite key with this warband. It's the whole denial of the opponent's glory. So if they're presenting you with this Arnulf just ready to be slaughtered, Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't pull the trick. Or if you have to, you know, push them to lethal. Deny that.
Sure.
Sorry, no, you scratch that. That won't work. Don't do it. Leave them alone.
Did you interrupt here a little bit? Did you ever find that you could score it yourself, kill your own fighters, and therefore get martyred and the denial?
Nasty.
So I used that, I think, twice in the Grand Clash. It was a lethal ward with the Crown of Avarice.
That can be really useful.
Really good. So that's four. Number five was Calculated Risk. Just, again, such a good objective card. In most decks that I saw, it's just free glory. Anything worth kind of keeping in mind with that one is having a lethal in your half with this deck, because we're hiding at the back. If I've tried to screw them by putting loads of lethals on their side, we can't score it, and that's not good. There is a workaround, though. If you summon the Blue Horror next to one and kind of run him through, that can work nicely. The Blue Horror really is the key to the warband, I think. He's so versatile in what he can do. Which brings me nicely to my sixth surge, which is Summoner. Summoner, again, it's a bit like Martyr. It's fine. I don't like it, but it's a necessary best of a bad situation. It's no cover ground. it can work. I'd say it triggers maybe 40-50% of games. It's again free glory, passive play. That's what this warband's focused around. Then you've got the boosters. So you've got Opening Gambit, which is easy to score with all those easy to score surges. Solid gains, great gains, combination strike. So all four of those are in there, which is why that flexible strategy gambit is so integral, really.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, when I first saw flexible strategy, I was like, what is going on?
Yes.
Why? Like, I've never seen somebody play this. And then took another look at your objective deck. I was like, oh, okay. So he's you know, your objective deck is kind of a high reward, high risk because of the chance of bricking. So if you have something to mitigate that, which you do, then I can see that making a lot more sense.
Did you have games where you felt like even using flexible strategy that you were still bricking your hands?
Yes. apart from getting hit really hard really quickly, it's probably the second biggest risk of the deck. But there's enough easy scores in there that it would have to be a bit of a statistical anomaly not to start getting the warning shots and the scrums and the shortcuts.
Sure.
If all six of those are right at the bottom of your deck, then yeah, it's just one of those games. But not a lot you can do about that, really.
Sure.
And then just to finish off the objectives, so yeah, obviously Acolyte the Cataphranes, which is the only third end phase objective I have, and keep them guessing. I think beforehand, I mean, I did dabble in Night Vault with having Acolyte and Superior Tactician, but I'm sure this is pretty well accepted wisdom anyway. Having one third end phase objective really is the max, I'd say, just because otherwise the risk of bricking your hand is that much more. At least with things like Combination Strike and Great Gains, you can score them in any phase. So, mm-hmm. And you know, if you've already kind of counted in your head, all right, I've had four of my easy surges, there's Combination Strike. Ditch that one maybe. Whereas if you've got a third end phase, that's harder to call.
Sure. Yeah. How early in the process do you feel like flexible strategy went into the deck? More of a late add, or you recognized pretty early on that it needed to be in there?
It was quite a late add, actually. Yeah, it's because it's boring, right? It's not exciting. I don't draw that and think, ooh, this is a juicy card. It's a necessary must. I did have one step ahead in there instead of flexible strategy to counter Tomes, mm-hmm. funny enough. but it was just, well, the reason I took that out actually was that I didn't know enough objectives. I'd try and call out like a two glory objective that they might have and was scrabbling for names and thought, you know what, this is only going to bite me. I'm only going to get frustrated at myself. So I switched to a flexible strategy and was amazed that I didn't do that before because it made things flow so much better. Really good card.
I love it. Move on to matchups here.
Well, I had a quick question. So we ran through your decks. Would you consider these Tomes decks to fit within sort of the standard sort of paradigms of control, flex, or aggro? Or do you think Tomes sort of becomes this separate thing? I guess question for both of you. Let's start with Benny.
Like the thing is, it's very defensive. It's more control than anything, but a degree that it probably is its own separate thing. I would call it more defensive than control. Definitely not aggro though. the only one I have to actually get to kill someone is Strange Demise. If I don't have to engage, then great.
Adam, what's your take on it?
This deck is fully control, really. We're hiding in corners. We're jumping away. We're doing all kinds of crazy shenanigans to keep the enemy away. I think a few cards can make it slightly flex, I guess. Things like Encroaching Shadow, Lethal Ward, Larval Lance. That's the whole flexibility thing, which I guess is what flex stands for. Control overall for sure. Sure. As Benny was saying, the tomes are defensive, primarily, apart from Tome of Offerings, which I don't run. And defensive really tends to be control.
Sure. I'd agree with that. I think it feels like what you're really trying to do is deny glory as much as possible, build up just enough to get your upgrades out and have that big score.
I think so.
We'll talk some of the strategy a little bit heading in. Adam, you said that Vortimus was almost always your tomes carrier. Did you ever find yourself making somebody else the tomes bearer? I know early on people were looking at the horror because it could be brought back. So even if it died, what percent of the time do you think Vortimus was your book guy?
He was the book man. He likes a good book. There's Vortimus. He tends to hold them.
Yeah.
So he was probably the carrier 90% of the time.
Okay.
The only thing is, if he gets killed early on, which is not a good situation for me to be in, then of course you have to have somebody else. The horror is a pretty good shout, but normally the defensive upgrades will go on Vortimus, and so the horror then only has 3 wounds and 1 dodge, which isn't great. It tends to be pretty ad hoc. I mean, what you can do if the tome carrier is killed, in terms of play, would be to hold a couple of tomes in the hand. You don't need to play the tomes until the fourth end phase, and they'll have the same effect. So there's no need to literally show your hand and put those tomes on early when you can have them in the back pocket. And that way, if your tome carrier does get killed, you've got a couple of glory at least that you can put on somebody else. That's kind of gameplay-wise. The blue horror is a decent option, but the thing is, if Vortimus dies, then the horror is, as I say, a 3 wound in total, a 3 movement fighter who's not going to last up very long.
Clock's ticking on him.
That's it, yeah. And if he can't be summoned back, then he's just as weak as anybody else, really. So it tended to be Vortimus normally because he's the priority person that I need to defend. And if I've got that in my head, you know, I just have to defend this one guy, then that makes things a little bit easier for me as well, I guess.
That makes sense. Benny, do you feel like you were Cursebreaker, Stormsar 90% of the time, or was it more spread out for you?
I would say about 70 to 80. A lot of the time, like Adam said, you might withdraw a couple, keep them back, make people think, waste a lot of activations killing Stormsar, thinking, oh, he's got all the tomes on him, and then just stick 2 or 3 on. But sometimes it doesn't work out like that. If you know you want to get through your hand, you don't want to be holding too many tomes. Generally, if I have to make the decision, then I'll go with Stormsar just because he's got the 2 shields. He's got more use out of the incantations, stuff like that as well, and the offerings.
Going in as far as matchups, we'll go right back to you, Benny, here. Was there a particular matchup that you found that you were worried about facing at the Clash, or something that you said, I've got to practice this a bunch because it's a bad matchup, or because it's more challenging, or any aspect on that?
Well, in my head, before the Clash, I was big thinking, oh, Grimwatch, basically stopping their Inspire mechanic, so you can't, with the way my deck works. And then they've got the access with Crackmarrow coming in with, 3 damage with Cleave, usually with Grid Strength, or the faction-specific Grid Strength. That's a pretty tough one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
But I think because of my preparation that I actually ended up okay with Grimwatch. I'll come on to that later. It was Profiteers probably in the end. That's where my biggest problem, which I didn't realize beforehand.
How about you, Adam? Did you feel like there was a particularly bad matchup for you, or anything you were particularly worried about going in?
Yeah, a few. So, I mean, well, firstly, for some odd reason, I faced very few curse breakers. In fact, the only curse breaker game I've ever played was Benny, and it's still to this day Benny. Well, I think the week before the Grand Clash.
It was a great game.
It was a good game, yeah. So kind of fear of the unknown a bit with the curse breakers. I was expecting more. I didn't play them at the Grand Clash, so that was kind of a misplaced worry. Other things that do concern me, though, are so thorns are a bit of a nightmare for me because they can move across pretty quickly with all those pushes. The queen can teleport in and kill Vortimus and do various shenanigans that I don't want her to do. They're quite tricky as a matchup for me.
I had a great one. I forgot to say that also.
Yeah.
Definitely the thorns.
Yes. One that I didn't think would be an issue was Grimwatch. I kind of looked at them and thought, I've got a few counters to objective play. Yeah, it'll be tough, but not too bad. The results kind of speak for themselves. I played 8 games against Grimwatch and lost 6 of them. So it turns out they are a bit smaller than that. But, yeah. I think just they're just so good in terms of their flexibility and all of their faction-specific cards. They're very hard to counter and stop them from scoring. Even with the cards that are meant for that, I think most people will find them a struggle, and we're no exception.
I think that's accurate. And I think, Benny, what you're talking about is, you know, there's usually this pressure in between, you know, how hard do I try to stop them inspiring? And I think both of you guys are like, they're just going to have to inspire them. I have to deal with it, you know.
It's more of a waste, trying to waste time, trying to not get them inspired. You end up wasting a whole round, putting yourself in danger. Sure. I tried that. But, yeah, better off just letting it happen.
Sure. Phil, you got any other questions, or should we move on to some of what we found during the actual games?
I guess I was just wondering, since it had kind of come up, of like, What were your thoughts about sort of the timing of tomes and when you're feeling like, oh man, I drew in all these tomes, but now, you know, do you play them right away and sort of show who's going to hold tomes, or at what point do you know you can hold them versus you have to play them to keep moving through your deck?
So for me, I would never hold them between rounds. I'd never hold one in the hand. Either it's, unless perhaps it was Tome of Glories and I didn't have any spare glory to put it on someone, which would be a rare situation. You're going to break your hand if you hold your tomes across rounds. So certainly play them before then. There's often little points. If it's not Tome of Vitality or Tome of Glories and you're not going to get any benefit from that, you gain no advantage by putting them on early. There is no advantage to you. All you do is telegraph someone that is now more of a target for your opponent. So you might as well wait until the end phase.
Fair. Same thoughts, Benny, or would you adjust anything with that?
I agree for the most part, but sometimes, you know, you've got 3 in your hand and you really need to get those parts, especially with my deck, I need to get the spells out a lot of the time. So I need to put them on someone so that I'm able to draw the full 5 or full whatever. But I will try and hold back if I can. And also, like Adam says, once you put on something like Tome of Disease or Healing or something like that, people catch on.
There's some that are not going to tip your hand as much. Talking about having 3 in hand, was there ever, what's your take? You opening hand, you're staring at a lot of upgrades, most of them being tomes. You know, is there a threshold of tomes that says I just can't throw this many away right through?
Yeah, in my first game, first round of the Grand Clash, I had 4 tomes and the other one was an upgrade, so I had the storm or something, and I also had Acolyte in my opening hand.
Oh no.
It was just so that was basically the absolute nightmare, my first ever game. So I've had that and I couldn't throw it away, so I kept it and then ended up just getting stuck. But that's how it goes when you run the deck, I think. So I hope it doesn't happen.
What do you think the way out is there? I guess it depends on what you're, you know, if you have Harness of Storm, then maybe you empower and get one of those out and move along.
That's what you're hoping for.
You know, if you have time, maybe draw some power cards or something. I don't know.
I think Frenzied Search helps mitigate that a little bit, I suppose. But that's just going to happen sometimes. For me, if I drew all 5 tomes up, I suppose it would depend on what my objectives were. If I had a couple of nice, easy scores, I'd probably keep it, to be honest, because you can put on the ones that are useful, Team of Vitality, Team of Glories, and they generally are useful, and kind of leave it at that. So that even with five, if I had all five, I'd probably keep it if the objectives were amenable to that. If I had a couple of easy scores for quick glory.
I guess, was there ever a circumstance where either of you needed to, where you ended up mulliganing, discarding in the opening hand any tomes? You know, was a hand like, I'm heavy upgrades, only one tome, I'm willing to give up this one tome? Or?
Well, I'm trying not to, but I probably should have in different cases. If I look back and think, it's often a deterrent when there's too many tomes in the hand. One or two tends to be okay, but if it's any more than that, I will be very worried about my end game score, as I've only got a 14 net glory. So I kind of need my tomes.
All right. Well, hey, we've been dancing around the games themselves a bit. Let's jump in. I think we'll try this. We'll do day one. We'll just pop back and forth. There's a lot of games to cover. So if you kind of give me who you played against, give me, you know, did you finish it 2-1? And give me, you know, what your highlight, what your takeaway from the game was, you know, sort of a, was there a learning moment? Was there something particularly notable? And we'll go with that. So, Adam, was your match one any?
Yeah, it sounds like it was better than Benny's. So it was actually against Alessandro, who's a player over in Bristol where I live. I've played against Al a few times. So drawing up, you know, 115 people, there's seven of us from Bristol. Oh, I've got to play you, have I? Oh, come on. you know, it was great games though. So he was playing Grashnak's Ravages, which is a pretty good matchup for me actually, because they're quite fragile. So if I hang back and they send people forward, I can kind of pick them off. They tend to be quite good for me. So, two wins in the first two games, strong start. I can't remember too much of the specifics, but going ahead quite strong.
All right. Well, Adam, what's match two looking like for you?
Match two. So match two for me was against Rich. So that was against the Godsworn Hunt, which is can be tricky. I think if they get some early kills and they start ramping up those upgrades, they can get really scary. They can really hit me hard. That didn't happen so much in these. It was three games in the end because I lost the first. You know that matchup that we said where all of those nice, easy to score objectives are hiding at the bottom of the objective deck? Well, that happened. So I'd say the average score for this warband is 15, 16 for a game, and we scored 5. It was really bad. But at least we managed to deny enough. So the end score was 5-6. So lost by 1. Wow. And I actually came down to the horror 3 sword attack against Thedra with 1 wound. He was trapped and he flubbed it. And it would have been glorious. It would have been the final, final hurrah. But lost that first one. Next two, pretty decisive. So 20-12 win and then 19-7 win. So the cards behaved themselves in the second two games, which was.
Sure.
Watch tomorrow.
You don't see a 5-6 very often.
No, pretty bad. Pretty bad. In fact, I think the only time that I've scored less than 5 in living memory was against you, Davey, against your Reavers. In fact, I have it right here. It was 4-16. Got absolutely brutalized by the Reavers. Unbelievable.
That was. How about you, Adam? What was round 3 looking like?
So round 3, we hit our first Grimwatch player. In an ominous tone. So playing against Dan from Wales, who I've not met before, but he's Wales and Bristol. We kind of have not a joint scene, but a close scene. But Dan's a good player, playing Grimwatch. It was another 3-game epic. First one, a loss, 14-17. Second one, a win, 22-18. And the third one, a loss, a nail-biter. It came really down to the very final kind of activations, 14-17. So a loss overall, but you know, the glory was 50 for me, 52 for him. So super tight game. Very, very tactical. And that would be mirrored, I think, later when I played Jay Clare on the second day. It's just a tricky matchup for us, I think, because they can score so reliably. Denial is very difficult for us.
Yeah. Yeah. They can, if you're leaving them alone, they can still get a fair amount of scoring while they just wander around and do their own thing.
That's exactly. Yeah.
And then, Adam, what was your round four looking like? And you're in the same boat knowing
that's it. Yeah. It's all to play for. So my round four is against, Rob playing the Profiteers, which actually for me is a pretty good matchup. I think Profiteers rely quite a bit on people coming towards them. Not hiding behind lots of blocked hexes in the back corner, which is exactly what I did both games. So, to be fair, I think so. My objectives came out pretty nicely, and Rob, when he did manage to get into position to make an attack, the dice failed him. I think pretty much every time. There weren't many times, I don't think, just because we were playing so cagey. But yeah, pretty decisive wins there. So 22-4. And then 16-4. So putting us overall on three wins, one loss, but with quite a healthy glory differential on plus 64 overall. So I thought, yeah, maybe top 16 worth, you know, potentially, but we'll kind of wait and see on that one.
Sure. And how long after match four did they announce who had made the cut? Like how long were you sat there sweating?
Yeah, it wasn't ideal.
How about you, Adam? What was your game one of the cut?
Game one. So we did know a breakdown of the warbands going into the top 16. So we had four Profiteers, four Grimwatch, four Cursebreakers, two Thorns, one Mologs, and then my Eyes of the Nine. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, Profiteers, happy with those, that's fine. Mologs, happy with those. The only thing I didn't really want to face was Thorns and Grimwatch. And I drew Grimwatch first. Fine. Yeah. Okay. So this was the game that was live streamed on Warhammer TV, actually, against Jay Clare. Yeah. Who I'd not met before. I didn't actually know about him and the fact he's done, you know, glass with all the war bands. And we kind of sat down at the filming area, and kind of a small chat was exchanged. He's asked me, you know, have I been to any Grand Clashes before? Yeah, one in Dallas, a little one, you know, a month ago. What about you? Yeah, I've been to five before. Three wins and two second places. Right, okay. Yeah, cool. Let's roll off then, shall we? But he was playing his Grimwatch. Really strong deck. We've mentioned it a few times already, I think, but Grimwatch have just got so many tools. First game was really good. Really, really fun game. I think both our objectives came out quite nicely. It flowed very well, and really came down to the end, and he just had that one final glory at the end to pip it from 19-19, which I would have won in objectives because of a fourth activation, Summon of the Blue Horror and Confuse onto the objective, so I would have won that. And he just had that sneaky glory left over to pip the win for 20-19 to him. So yeah, going into the second, it would have been nice to win that one, but never mind. Second one, this is the problem with the deck, is sometimes it does brick, and that kind of happened in the second game. We had a funny moment too where he summoned a ghoul back and didn't want it where exactly it went. As it turned out, the place it went to was exactly where I didn't want it, which was next to Vortimus, and he had Snare and Pit Trap in hand. So instantly, we're going from, I'm feeling pretty good about this, I'm feeling fairly secure, to Vortimus is on one wound and he's surrounded by angry ghouls. So that flipped the game pretty quickly. He managed to survive only because of Tome of Healing, actually, which is the one time that I've ever used Tome of Healing. Unfortunately, he then Fenway Crystal the Duke next to him and finished him off with his hammer. So that was fun. So yeah, that was a bit more one-sided. So 11-17 on that second one, and a loss overall for me. But you know, JJ's clearly a really very good player. We had really good games, really good chat. Yeah, it was good fun.
Well, very cool. It was. I didn't get to watch it start to finish, but I did remember coming in and them talking exactly about that moment with the ghoul arriving.
Yes,
moral victory.
That got some airtime on there. That's pretty fun. Well then, how was your match two of the cut here, Adam?
Match two was against Dan Mashford. Didn't want to face Grimwatch, didn't want to face Thorns. Oh, face Thorns. All right, fine. And then we struggle for them, as I say, the queen can be really nasty and they can swarm me as well. And both those scenarios aren't good. I managed to win the first game quite decisively, actually, 17-9, which was a good win. I think, you know, my cards, they came out right. Just one of those games where things work, which was nice for a change. Second game, 13-17, lost to me. But super tight, and same for the third, 18-20 loss to me. So a loss overall, but really good games, really, really good games. Very tactical, every activation being kind of, you know, questioned over and over again, agonised over, you might even say. And in the end, it was quite a close one. So 48 glory to me, 46 to him, but two wins in his back pocket. So again, a narrow loss, but really good games, and yeah. No regrets on that one.
How was your final match, Adam?
So my third, I've faced the Grim Watch, I've faced the Thorns. Anything's better than that. And it's Molog, which I'm rubbing my hands at, because Molog generally actually is quite an easy matchup for me. I've only got to worry about this one smelly troll, and I've got plenty of movement ploys to jump around and ignore him, and Transfixing Stare and Faintly Crystals and Deceitful Steps and all that lovely stuff to avoid him. So facing Andre, who I think came from Poland. I think there was maybe three of them from Poland that came over just for the event, which is pretty cool, and you've got to admire the commitment there. So he faced Andre, two wins. It's quite a favourable matchup for me. 14-7, I think 11-8 actually. The second one got a bit close for comfort. He managed to kill lots of things with a Tome of Offerings, which I wasn't too fond of. But yeah, it worked out okay. So overall for me in the final 16, two losses, one win. As I've already mentioned, it goes in tiers. So you lose the first one and the top position you can get is ninth. I lost the first two, so I ended up coming 13th overall.
Okay.
Just because my glory differential was pretty good.
Is there anything you'd like to change in the deck, or would have prepped more, or adjusted with your play style based on it, or do you would you kind of let it go as it was?
I mean, in terms of prep, you can always play more. You can always play more matchups, and
sure.
I've discovered Vassal in the last 3 weeks, and it's absolutely incredible. If you're listening to this and you haven't tried out Vassal, I mean, be warned, because it will suck all of your free time when you've got Underworlds on tap at your fingers. It's brilliant, really well done. And Shuby and the team that have put that together, massive thank you, because it's so good. So you can always play more, you can always prep more. In terms of the deck, I was pretty happy with it, actually. I've considered tinkering with it. I might take it to the Grand Skirmish in Germany that I'm going to at the end of next month. So I was thinking, what would I do differently? I've already kind of mentioned maybe adding in Shifting Reflection, and I'd swap that for Center Retention, but it's a really close call. I'll play test and see how that works. And the only other thing I can think of is dabbling with Mazig's Many Legs, just because I think it's cool.
Sure.
I think if it was a longer range, it'd be an auto take for me. Yeah. If it was maybe three hexes, I'd definitely want it in, because I tend to play quite bunched up at the back and to, you know, push someone just in the way. So Vortimus is now out of charge range, for example, or push the guy with Crown of Avarice right up so they're the only target, something like that could actually be really valuable. But with two range, it's pretty restrictive. And similarly, if it could be used on the caster itself, it'd be brilliant, because Vortimus could just kind of skip away on his little arachnid legs. but alas. So, you know, I might play with it. I've not really given it a fair shake. It would be instead of Great Fortitude, and actually that's got a lot of benefit. So I don't know. I like it because it's the art is pretty cool as well.
It is really cool art.
It's nice to look at.
we also, this is kind of appropriate for this episode, we noticed that it has a subtype on it. It's a lost page. Have you guys seen that?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Indeed. And I hope there's an Acolyte of the Lost Pages release, then we'll run both. And
we
absolutely hate by everybody.
we'll do this next year, where you've both brought Lost Pages. Overall, you enjoyed the play style of Acolyte. How do you think it fits in? You know, have you felt it to be where its place exists in the current meta, having played as much as you have with them?
Yeah, I mean, it is a trade-off, because with all those, I mean, for me, the three that aren't as good, Tome of Healing, Tome of Diseases, Tome of Insight, those are three potentially really valuable upgrades that you're missing. So that's the flip side of them, I suppose, is that there is a trade-off there. And while it might be a bit, oh no, playing Tomes, boo hiss, that's true, but there are a few things that I can then use to bolster my own warband. So that's the trade-off. Mm-hmm. I think at the moment, as I say, it's a throwback from things like Superior Tactician no longer being in rotation. So what are the good third end phase cards are there? I think with future expansions, if there are some good universal third end phase objectives, that could change. Certainly for me, I kind of dabbled with Tomes in Night Vault and tended to find that I'd generally get three or four. I think the mean was probably three glory. And then I was thinking, well, why not just take Superior Tactician? That's three as well. It's third end phase. And it means I can have all these other cool upgrades to do stuff with. So, we'll see what comes out, I suppose, in the future. But for the time being, it's a strong card. It's a strong playstyle. I wonder if they will think about bringing out another one step ahead S card, which would also have a very large impact. Or even if one step ahead gets a lot of use, that could change things quite a lot. If everyone has it, it's going to be a lot less reliable.
Speaking of which, did anybody get one step against or one step ahead?
I did. Yeah. I got stepped on a couple of times. in fact, that was against the Moloch player in the second game played that. So that 11-8 win was going to be, I think, like a 16-8 win. So I had all five on whoever it was. Kacharik, I think, was the only one left alive.
Okay.
But yeah, one step ahead, it wasn't quite enough for him, unfortunately, which I was sort of gutted for him about, because I like the idea. I like the idea in principle.
Sure. You like the cold sweat that you feel, and like, oh, I hope he doesn't have much he's got left to score in that hand.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Please, that roller hammer. Come on. It's a really tricky card to add, actually, because it's, you know, Gambits are probably, well, arguably the most contested slot in a deck. And you're replacing so many of the things that are always useful. You know, there's always room for a Haymaker. There's not a warband out there that can't use Haymaker. So to replace a really valuable card with something that might not even come up, might not even be worthwhile in a given matchup, it's a really tricky one to fit in. And I tried to with my deck, but as I say, it lost out to everything else in the end. It's difficult.
Yeah, absolutely, because you can think, okay, so the obvious, you know, it's great against, well, it's potentially great against, half the time it's great against Acolyte of the Cataphranes. And when Superior Tactician was floating around, you'd have a pretty good idea that was coming out. Mm. Now it's a little tougher because, say against Grimwatch, you might try to use it to deny supremacy, but maybe they just moved on to those objectives in preparation, or maybe they're just scoring in the name of the king, which it doesn't work against. It won't work against the surges, which are powerful there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got to pick one, and it's not as clearly laid out. And I think just in general with the new, it's going to be stronger where play styles have settled a little bit. And I think they're still kind of in flux, and we're still figuring it out. If we figure out a card that, Grimwatch are reliably taking and signaling or something like that, then maybe it steps up. But yeah, it's such a tight spot is the Gambits. So, Phil, you got any kind of wrap up here at all?
I think we're good.
All right. We talked a little when we talked to you before. We know Adam, you're on the Magors, kind of changing things up. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, allegedly changing things up.
Well, I mean, from the eyes, it's an entirely different Chaos God. So
it's a different Chaos God actually. So I'm very much into the hobby side of things too. And I've converted quite a few into Zinchin beings. My Magors are actually, I've used the Nightmare spawn from Forge World. Because with Stake the Faithless, it's kind of all, it's got three heads, it's got appendages everywhere, it's all pretty gribbly. That's my Rip Tooth, for example.
Very nice.
And I've used various kind of Exalted Sorcerer bits from 40k. I've rummaged through my bits box and I had all sorts of weird stuff to what was once these wholesome Warriors of Khorne are now these twisted aberrations of Tzeentch, which is just how I like them. So aesthetically, no change. But yeah, you know, I wanted to get something a bit more aggro. Whether I've succeeded in that or not, I don't know. They're a bit unorthodox at the moment, but yeah, we'll see how they go.
Sure. I mean, it can be pretty fun to just have that time where you're trying a whole bunch of different decks out after you're focusing the one, you know, exclusively for such a long time. So I get that. So that's the freedom we've got right now. We don't have any big event coming for a little while. So I think Phil and I are a little free to kind of try some different things. Don't have to worry about whether it's prepping for Adepticon or such. Although yeah, maybe, sure, Phil, are you thinking Wild Hunt for Adepticon, Phil? Are you...
That is still to be determined. Okay. All right. I think I'd need to feel a little more confident that I can win consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. all right. Well, anybody got any last thoughts before we start to close this out?
Yeah, I suppose. Well, if you're in the Bristol or Southwest area, check out Bristol Independent Gaming. It's a little independent shop. It's about 4 miles south of the Sea Centre. Pretty good. We've got a good strong group there. You know, we normally got 8 on a Tuesday night, which is when we play. So if you happen to be listening and you're in the southwest of England, then come along.
Sure. Sounds good. You get to play against some interesting Wigors, it sounds like. So
yeah, well indeed.
All right. So you can always get in touch with us at WTHcast or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. You guys, if people wanted to give you a shout out, are either of you on Twitter, or have you got a preferred spot, or just go find you in Bristol?
Find me in Bristol, really. Okay. I'm imaginatively called Adam F on Discord and Vassal, so jump on there. Any questions, just let me know.
Yeah, always. It's always there. So. All right. So we just wanted to say, thanks to everybody for listening. If you get a chance, drop us a review. We greatly appreciate it. Our next episode is going to be our 1 year mark. We've been recording this thing for a year. So we'll be coming at you with a little bit of a celebration there. And we'll just be waiting to see what exciting news GW drops in the meantime. And we'll adapt to that. Your recommended listening for this episode is going to be Cello Song by The Books. And for What the Hex, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
I'm Adam.
For What the Hex, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
And you guys go ahead and give me this is Adam. I always forget people that. Go ahead.